Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Sharon Blackford. I represent Daryl Riley, the father in this case, who is here with me in court this morning. And I would request 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
4 minutes, okay.
Thank you. As the Court knows, Mr. Riley raised several issues, seven, I believe. We don't have time to talk about all of them today. So what I thought I would do is begin by addressing the ride-out issue, then possibly go to the statutory issue, unless there is another issue the Court would like me to direct my time to. In lieu of that, I'll begin with the ride-out issue.
With regard to ride-out, the holding in ride-out is that the parent either contributes to the child's attitude or fails to make reasonable efforts to require the child to comply with the parenting plan.
Yes, Your Honor.
What evidence in this record shows him making reasonable efforts to require the child to comply with the parent?
Are you referring to both children?
Either one.
Okay.
Either or both.
On a factual level, he testified repeatedly that he told them that they must comply with the parenting plan. He drove them to the mother's house, and he told them, he said, the record specifically says every week, he told them, this is what the parenting plan says, and you're supposed to do it. I think that the real issue regarding ride out is, what do you do when you have a very mature and very stubborn 17-year-old? We're not litigating ride out in this court regarding the 13-year-old. But regarding the 17-year-old.
Well, let me be clear on that.
You're not
challenging the contempt sanction as to the 13-year-old?
No, we only challenged it as to the 17-year-old.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. The child in ride-out was 13. I think that's too similar to this case to challenge it. But I think that the child who is 17 has circumstances that are specifically contemplated in ride-out, when ride-out talks about the maturity of the child and the character of the child. And the circumstances that line up with ride-out in this case are the fact that not only was Ariana 17, but she had her own car. She was in her AA at college, which she was doing in parallel with her high school career. She had obtained a professional license. I believe it was an insurance license. She handled all of her own medical appointments and designed her own academic curriculum. In addition, Mr. Riley testified, and no one seemed to object, that she's a very headstrong young woman. So given the language in Rideout that says that there are some children whose objections it's not possible to overcome because of their age, maturity, and character, our argument is that the older child fits this definition in Rideout of a child who's recalcitrant to visit cannot be overcome. She feels too much like an adult because she does too many adult things, and she's almost an adult and was succeeding. So she was not amenable to being forced to go to her mother's house, is our argument in Rideout.
To what extent does the trial court's decision reflect a credibility assessment that didn't accept the father's version of his efforts?
I think it's obvious that the court didn't accept the father's version of his efforts. Yes, Your Honor. However, I think that the court did not make a finding that the father was the source of the children's refusal to go to the mother's house. I know that opposing counsel has argued that such a finding was made, but after I received the respondent's brief, I combed through that order on contempt again and the oral argument again, and I didn't see that anywhere in there. What I see that the court said was that he failed to overcome the recalcitrance when he should have. So for that reason, we're not addressing the issue of the source of the recalcitrance, because Judge Cahan didn't find that he was the source, only that he should have overcome, and he did not. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Thank you.
Thank you. I see I don't have that much time left. Perhaps it would be better for me to save my time and embark on the statutory in the rebuttal, all in one piece. Is that acceptable?
That's fine. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Caleb Oakenberg, Scalinger Bender, on behalf of the respondent, Suzette Riley, who is present in the courtroom today. I think it's important to point out right away that on appeal, with the exception of Ariana, Mr. Riley does not dispute that he willfully engaged in this contemptuous behavior, which was described in detail in the court's findings of fact, including a refusal to return the children to the mother's residence for a span of 9 months for Ariana, and undermining the counseling requirements in the parenting plan, disparaging the mother, and to the point where they were severely alienated from her, and involving the children in the legal proceedings. We also had a case manager involved in this case at this point in time, who the parties were required to follow her recommendations. He refused. So those findings by the court are not being challenged, and I think that's important. Rather, what Mr. Riley is primarily taking issue with are the sanctions that were ordered, and those were entirely appropriate and not an abuse of discretion based on all of the substantial evidence that was presented to the court.
Before we move on that, if I understand appellant's argument here just made this morning, they're saying that the evidence in the record supports a finding that he did make reasonable efforts by telling the children that they had to comply with the parenting.
Right. Well, I would dispute that. First of all, the evidence in the record, I think, directly contradicts the statements by counsel. For example, the court specifically found that he would drive the children to the mother's house and then wait in the car so that the children would come right back out to his car. They found that wasn't an appropriate way of complying with the parenting plan, and that was in bad faith.
In that particular situation, what should he have done?
Left.
Just left?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is, I think, what Rideout stands for. And I think the other piece about this that we should make sure we're clear on is that with regard to the Rideout piece, Ariana has emancipated, and so she's no longer even subject to this case. So to some extent, this issue is moot because Madeline is the child who is continuing to be subject to this case, and they acknowledge that the contempt findings were appropriate for Madeline. So, but still, even if we're going to make the theoretical argument here for Ariana, I certainly think that in addition to him not making the proper efforts to comply with the parenting plan, which are outlined in the record in the oral findings and in the written findings, there is evidence, there are oral findings by the court to show that Mr. Riley was the source of Ariana's refusal to comply with the plan. The court specifically stated that it was Mr. Riley who was the one who had involved the children and were the ones who had caused them to not want to be going to the mother's house. This is a case that has a long history of Mr. Riley behaving in this way. There were already 191 findings against Mr. Riley for this exact behavior, for his abusive use of conflict. And what happened was is that right after this modification of the parenting plan in 2015, Mr. Riley disregarded the court orders and he proceeded to escalate his abusive use of conflict. So I want to get in. I know that counsel didn't get into it, but anticipating the arguments regarding the statutory authority for the sanctions, I think it's very clear that the court exercised remedial sanctions that are found in statute. There's no use of the court's inherent contempt powers here. Every single remedial sanction that was ordered by the court was either available under 2609160, which is the family law contempt statute, or 7.21030, which is the civil contempt statute. Now, so if we just walk through very quickly, Judge Cahan ordered all three of the mandatory family law contempts, so that would be make-up time, sanctions, attorney's fees. The imprisonment is not mandatory under that statute. And then under the civil contempt statute, she relied on subsections 2 and 3, which specifically allow a court to design contempt orders to coerce compliance with the existing orders, and in addition, enter any other remedial sanction if there's an express finding that the sanctions alone would not be sufficient.
With regard to the Family Bridges program, why is the $20,000 payment not considered to be an extraordinary expense vis-a-vis the child support order as opposed to a remedial sanction tied into the contempt statute?
Well, I think that our argument essentially is it could be either or both. And I think that if your question is how could it fit under the civil contempt statute,
right.
The civil contempt statute itself expressly allows for the court to issue sanctions that are designed to ensure compliance with the order, and any other sanction that if it makes an express finding that the other remedies aren't appropriate or won't work. And here, financial penalties such as a $20,000 payment for an educational workshop for children is well within the trial court's discretion. I mean, Ms. Riley also paid $20,000. It was split between the parties.
No, it was an equal split.
Right.
Feels more like a child support.
Well,
extraordinary expense than a sanction. But let's talk about the sanction issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is in imposing that financial sanction, is the court required to consider the ability of either or both parties to pay it?
Not within the civil contempt statute. The civil contempt statute has mandatory sanctions that are that can be issued. But certainly the court did anyway here. The court observed and made findings on the record regarding both parties' ability to pay this amount, noting that Mr. Riley was in a superior economic position compared to Ms. Riley, who had fronted all the costs, including owning two houses, having equity in his homes, having additional financial accounts. And there were misrepresentations that the court noted regarding Mr. Riley's financial circumstances that were, for example, that his counsel indicated that he didn't have any equity in his houses, and in fact he ended up paying from the equity from his house just as Ms. Riley did.
What about the challenges to the Family Bridges program as not being an appropriate program for a variety of reasons that are argued in the briefs?
Yes, and this has been, it's interesting because about a half a page of Mr. Riley's original opposition to the contempt motion was focused on Family Bridges, and then it sort of has spiraled and become a bigger and bigger thing. So a couple points on Family Bridges. First of all, it is Ms. Riley under the parenting plan had sole decision making for educational decisions. And so Ms. Riley had indicated she wanted to engage in the educational workshop, which is designed for families with kids who are involved in parental alienation.
So let me ask, so your take on this is it's more educational than, say, therapy, for example.
It is not therapy. That is correct.
It's not therapy at all. That's the respondent's position.
100%. And I think that is based on all of the literature. Now, he would like to argue that it is therapy. We kind of walk through what happens at this workshop. It is not rocket science, but it is important when you have severely alienated children. It is a situation where the children learn about how they can have positive relationships with both parents. They learn about how to move forward and not linger on the past. They watch videos about having relationships. They have a structured family meeting where you can talk about what you appreciate about each other. This is not a therapeutic intervention. In fact, the aftercare portion that the court ordered Mr. Riley to participate in is very similar to what Ms. Riley and the children went through at Family Bridges, although he's working with somebody who's actually not affiliated with Family Bridges. It's just akin to the scientific literature that was presented to the court and that exists on parental alienation, which is a very complex topic.
I've been consuming all your time, so let me move on to the process by which the children were brought into the courtroom, turned over to the Family Bridges people, and then taken to California. What is the authority for that? Is that just enforcing the court's order, or is that part of the contempt sanction? What's your analysis of that?
I think both. I believe that the court has the authority to has the discretion and the authority to require that children appear in his courthouse and so that it can deliver the ruling to the children directly. And that was what the judge here very carefully, and we can see in the record, very carefully and painstakingly deliberated over whether it was appropriate. Ultimately, it was appropriate and in the children's best interest because there was a real chance that based on past behavior that if the information was relayed to them through their father that there would be a further deterioration of the relationship and an inability to comply with the court's orders. So in the court enforcing the parenting plan, which was the subject matter of this contempt proceeding and the case manager's recommendations, the court believed, and we support that it was in the children's best interest to engage them this way directly. It is highly unusual. It is not a circumstance that courts, being in family court, that happens very often at all. But certainly in appropriate circumstances, courts do involve children, and particularly in cases involving parental alienation, like the Farr case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, I will address the statutory issue, but as is usual, I would just like to touch on a couple of points that my opposing counsel has brought up. Number one, as far as family bridges, no, it is not merely an educational program that does no harm. There's quite a bit of threat therapy and coercion in it. And as far as
on those points, didn't the trial court conclude otherwise, though? I mean, otherwise, the trial court clearly, reading her ruling and reading the orders, thought this was a reasonable thing.
She absolutely did, Your Honor. She thought it was very reasonable. And part of the reason that she thought it was reasonable was because she had reviewed the literature, the scientific literature provided by my opposing counsel to her. And I, too, reviewed that. And it was published by reputable journals. But this literature was written by the founder, which is fine. But when you look at the actual literature provided, what the founder stated was he claimed extraordinary success ratios and extraordinary statistical indicators of reunification happening smoothly with no validation, no verification, no external checks or balances. In this journal, I don't know why they accepted it, but it happens. It is merely a claim. Numbers that the founder stated with no backup, no checks, no verification. A mere claim. And unfortunately, I'm sorry, but when we call something that is based on a mere claim with no checks or balances or verification, that's junk science. That's a claim and only a claim. So the trial court read this claim and felt that this claim was sufficient. However, it is not. It is not science when you merely have a claim of numbers with no verification.
So what is the nature of your challenge on appeal? Is this, there's no substantial findings of fact to support this? It's legally erroneous? And quite honestly, in reading the brief, I couldn't figure out what the focus of the challenge was.
I know, Your Honor, I'm sorry. There's so many things to challenge, and I may not have clarified correctly, but I believe it was an abuse of discretion. I would love to have the better standard, but to be honest, I believe it was an abuse of discretion to order the children into the care of this program and to undergo this program when the program was not sufficiently vetted. It was too out of the box.
Does the trial court, putting aside whether or not the trial court erred on this factually or whether there was an abuse of discretion, does the trial court have the authority as part of a remedial contempt sanction to order such a program?
Right. So part of the problem I have with Family Bridges as a remedial sanction is that the trial court did not actually go through the steps of the family court sanction for first violation, first contempt of a parenting plan. When I went back and looked, the court gave 90 days of makeup time, but the actual makeup time that would have been imposed is, I believe, 187 for Ariana because she had left her mother's house sooner, and 116 days for Madeline. So full makeup time wasn't even applied. So that statute wasn't completely complied with.
But isn't that just that one point? Isn't that to your client's benefit? It's less makeup time than she could have ordered.
My client's goal is not to separate the children from their mother.
I accept that. I'm just saying that she went to a lesser sanction, right, as opposed to ordering more.
Well, if she felt a lesser sanction was appropriate, then why was it appropriate for her to go to all these extreme lengths, invoking other sanctions and more general authority to go to extreme lengths like Family Bridges, which has resulted in my client not speaking to his youngest daughter to this day? If she was so willing to give a lesser sanction, that would indicate that it was not as onerous or severe a problem. And I don't think that really comports with what she wrote. I think she wrote that it was a severe problem. I think what happened is she created a parallel parenting plan. Just to sum up, Your Honor, she looked at the civil contempt statute. I believe that she just sort of shortcutted to the end of that and said, we're going to create a parallel parenting plan. But contempt statutes are not intended to create parallel parenting plans and to suspend parenting plans. That is not... Oh, yes, Your Honor.
Are any of your issues moot?
By
virtue of the emancipation?
I believe that it's in the public interest. So I don't believe it's moot. I believe it's in the public interest. And also, she wasn't emancipated as of the time of this order. So just taking this as of the time of this order, no. Plus, it's in the public interest to resolve this.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.